That would come, but yeah, great. Welcome all to Tech Days. I hope you enjoyed your day up till now. Everybody had a good day? Some hands, please? Anyone? Good, very good, thank you. So you joined the session to learn a little bit about our Azure vending machine. We've came up with the idea a while ago, and yeah, we thought that Tech Days would be a good place to tell the story towards you guys, and also to take you along on a journey to end-to-end solutions. So who's with us today? First of all, Wouter Roos, he's our software engineer, software consultant at QNH. Brian Passos, he's a BI analytics consultant at QNH. And myself, I'm Kevin Goorsen, and I'm a cloud consultant at QNH. Please, if you have any questions, come visit us at the Expert Lounge later on, or hop by at our stand. We're located at stand 25. And all your feedback can please supply it through the Tech Days app. So first of all, you might wonder, why? Why would you do something like an Azure vending machine? Why would you come up with that? Well, basically, it started all when our CEO had a little story about end-to-end solutions. Where do we want to go with our company? And yeah, what do we want to do as QNH? And the story that he had was, we want to supply end-to-end solutions. And to do that, we need to work together as a big team instead of all having our separate focuses. So we have BI, we have development, we have infrastructure guys. But they're all great when they work on their own. But if you combine them all, then you get really awesome solutions. So we took that into our mind. And after the meeting, we had a couple of drinks, perhaps a couple more. But and we were discussing, like, OK, this sounded really great. It was a really good story. But how can we explain this to customers? Because if you go over there and you tell them, yeah, we do end-to-end solutions, and then they'll be like, yeah, good. I know 20 more vendors that do that as well. So prove it to me. How can you show me that you do end-to-end solutions? And how can you show me that you can actually do it instead of just saying to me that you can do it? So keeping that in mind, we had a little brainstorm session. And we're all pretty familiar with the Azure platform. So we took out this plate. Any of you recognize it? Yeah, this is the Microsoft architecture plate for Azure. And I don't know if this one is totally up to date, but it changes quite often because Microsoft comes popping up with new services every now and then. And lately, it's going pretty fast. So there's new services almost every week. Keeping this plate in mind, we basically thought, OK, so we have all these different services. We have a complete PaaS landscape. How can we leverage that? How can we look at, OK, we have these competences. We have these areas of expertise within our company. How can we make this feasible? How can we make this touchable so the customer can actually see that, yes, you do understand the technology, and yes, you do know how to combine it all? And of course, we're pretty young guys, so we wanted to keep a little bit more fun of it, and not just building some gigantic real-world scenario, but we wanted to have a little bit of fun with it. And that's basically where we started with the solution. First of all, we had an idea. We had some PaaS assets. We had an idea that we wanted to include a LEGO Mindstorms robot because, well, LEGO is just cool. We just like to play with LEGO. So, but how do you combine it? Because, yeah, it's all these separate parts. They need to interact. They need to work together. And also, in the end, you need to have a working product. You don't want to have all these separate parts that are just tied up. So we took the plate, and out of that, we picked a couple of components that we thought we need to create the end solution. As you can see here, I've added in Power BI. Power BI is not included in the Azure plate, but hey, Power BI, it's Office 365, and we just like it to generate dashboards because it's a really powerful tool to generate visual dashboards instead of just showing you pure raw data in a table. So in that mix, we also added in a Raspberry Pi with some LEDs because, yeah, having some flashing lights that makes it a little bit more playful and also brings it more to life. And, yeah, of course, we wanted to add the LEGO robot in there. And, yeah, seeing things is nice, but if you can actually get something from it, that's always a nice thing. So we added in some goodies. And so you people, when you look at it, you can also get something from it. It's not just look at it and say, oh, that's nice, bye. So We brought some nice treats for you. Looking at all these services, I don't know if you know all of them or if you know some of them. I'll just quickly walk through them. In this presentation, we're going to explain a lot more about most of these parts. And yeah, we're also going to do that with our own expertise. So I'm going to tell something about Azure Automation, Hybrid Workers, OMS, because I'm an infrastructure guy. Walter is going to tell you more about the development side. So he's going to touch on the API apps, web apps. And Brian, he's our BI man. He knows a lot more than I do about Power BI, about machine learning, and also how that all fits in with all the data that we gather. If you look in this picture, then basically we've touched all of them. If you want to see it all, just come over. We can show you. And, well, basically, I'm going to hand it over to Wouter, and he's going to tell you a lot more about all the web apps and Signal R and the web API that we use to make it all work.
Okay, thank you. So, as Kevin said, the development part of the solution, we start off with our web app. It's basically a basic Azure web app, which is built on ASP.NET. We use some AngularJS. I think, who of you guys know AngularJS? Okay, yeah, it's a pretty popular platform at the moment to build really responsive web applications. And we also use Signal R. If you guys know Signal R, it's quite a lot, it's nice. Signal R, for the people who don't know, is actually a platform which enables you to push content to applications, which can be web applications or classical desktop applications, rather than a client having to retrieve the data from the server each time. So it's a really powerful tool. I will get into it a bit more later on. So our web application, for the guys who've already been at our stand, looks like this. You get a simple form in which you can enter your information. It looks a bit like this. So you have to enter your name, your age, your gender, and the company you work at. And this data, when you click the next button, we will save that to our database for later use. And then the user will be presented with a selection screen on which you can select one of the products Gavin just showed you. So when you make a selection, you just tap one of the items. And then when that happens, our web application will actually consult a bit of Azure Machine Learning to get a suggestion based on the data we already have, which we thought, which product we thought you would pick. So Brian will go into that later on. In the BI part, I just call a simple API and I get a number and I show which one it is on the screen. That looks like this. So after that, you will, let's see if the slide works. Yeah, the order information will be saved to the database, also for later use again. And then a job will be queued in Azure Automation. Kevin will tell you all about that in a minute. Essentially, what I do is just I call again an API with some request in it and an order ID, and I put that in the queue. But what also happens, and this is the interesting part of our web application, is that a single R message is sent at this moment, which will trigger our clients, and we have two of them, I will get into that later, to do something. So we will push content to those clients. So first we have our Raspberry Pi, which is actually made in Java, so I didn't do that. We had someone for that to, because I'm a .NET guy. But it works, so Java's also nice, I guess. and we also have, of course, our web application, which will then display a page which shows queued. So at this point we have a burning LED, or it will flash for the product you choose. We have three, for the guys who saw the stand, we have three places where the products are, and then when you select the product, the LED will light up and it will blink until the order is retrieved. So now we have an order queued in our application, so there is a lot of stuff going to happen on that, which isn't actually in my expertise, so Gavin will elaborate on that next. But what we do still have is an API, and the API is actually very important, because we use that to, from the robot part of the solution, to push status updates to our application. So it looks a bit like this. So it runs in PowerShell. So PowerShell sends an update at a given moment, for example, when the robot starts running. And then the order is updated in the database. But also, again, a message is sent to the signal R bus on the web application, which will then, again, trigger our LED application to do something and set our status on the screen to running. This actually works very nice. And it's all instant. The clients don't have to do anything about this. So that's nice for a robot controlled by Azure, which retrieves a goodie for you. But what can you do with this in the real world? Say you have a web application or a single client application, it's also nice, which calls an API, which communicates with the database to retrieve and store some data. So with a classical application, you would get something like this. The client will retrieve some data from the server, and the user can edit that data, and he can then again save it, and it will be saved to the database, and everything works fine. But what happens if you don't have one client, but you have two or more other clients, which will also are editing the same data at that moment? They don't know that there is an update for the data the first client just pushed. So that's where Single R comes into place. If you implement Single R, then you can, for example, your API or a web application or any kind of server, you just have to create a hub. For people who want to know how that works exactly, come visit us at the stand or at the lounge, and I will get into it a bit more. But essentially what Single R does is when a client sends a message or updates a record, then we can trigger, push a message to the Single R hub, which will then be broadcast to all clients which are subscribed to that message. So there's a really powerful way to get all your clients to know that something has changed and that they can act something. They can act on that. So, for example, when this happens, you could, if it's a simple record, just send the updated value with a Single R message so the clients can use it. But if it's more complex, so something needs to be done with a new value, you can just give a signal from, hey, this has changed, do something with it, and then all clients can do their own stuff in order to get the application to work again. So really interesting stuff. If you don't have worked with it yet, I encourage you to do, because it's really the next, I think, a better way to do multi-client applications. So yeah, that was my part. Brian is now going to tell you all about the machine learning and the Power BI stuff in our application. So
thank you. Like Wouter told you, there's a lot of data we store in the database. We have the order data, we have all the types of information on our customers. So we have the gender, the age, the company people work for, the location of the company. All this data, of course, is useful for presenting, but also useful and interesting for further analysis and data analytics. Let me first show a bit of Power BI we used. Of course, we use the data from the database in order to create a Power BI environment. What you see over here is a little bit an overview of how Power BI works. So Power BI is an online service, which is actually not part of Azure, but still it really fits well with it, so we still use it. It's an online service which can use a lot of different data sources. In our case, we use an Azure SQL database. And Power BI connects with it through the Power BI gateway. So data is not actually online, it's the metadata that's online, but it still connects with the data locally. And the data can be accessed through multi-devices. So it's on the browser servers on your laptop, of course, but also on your phone, your smartphone, and tablets as well. A new feature is that you can use alerts. So you can set alerts for certain data values. In our case, we put the data value in the number of orders, so we know if we have to fill the stock and make sure that we still have enough products at our stand. But first of all, before you deploy it, you use Power BI Desktop in order to create the dashboard. We'll focus a little bit more on that. So what you see over here is an overview of Power BI Desktop we use to create the dashboard. On the right-hand side, you see the data set, so you can see all the columns you can select to click and to create your visual. And on the left of that, you can see some visualization options. There's quite a large of options in the data set already in the Power BI Desktop environment, but still there's a lot of more on the online web server, so you can download a lot of them in the store and even add more visualizations. Once you're finished with the local Power BI Desktop report, you can publish it online. And you get an overview like this. You can also see it at our stand. Let me just quickly walk through you with the different elements. In the middle, you see the different types of products we offer. You see the power bank, the Mars and consultancy, which is a little lower, a little less popular, the consultancy. On the left-hand side, you see a map where we plot all the locations of the people who visit us at the stand. And all the types of products can be seen over there. And on the right-hand side, you can see a demographic distribution of the people who visit us. It's quite interesting to see all the differences in data. And it's even more interesting, actually, to create a data analytics solution over this in order to maybe create even more insights on this. Therefore, we also use the database, of course, but now we use Azure Machine Learning. Azure Machine Learning is an online tool from Azure, which we use in order to create this overview you saw earlier by Wouter. So the advice given by Azure Machine Learning can be seen over there. So we say, in this case, we expect you would use for consultancy. And the advice is created by the machine learning environment, which you can see over here in the studio. Are there any people who use Microsoft Business Intelligence? No one? No, then you won't recognize this. But this is an overview which is quite visually, just like in the business intelligence environment of Microsoft. The cool thing with this tooling is that it seems to be quite easy to step into data analytics and to create your own model. On the left-hand side, you can select some boxes to import data to create a model. And you can test the models within in the middle part of the environment. But still, there's some tricky parts because you still need to have some statistical background in order to be able to understand which model to choose. Microsoft helps a little bit with that. They use an algorithm cheat sheet, so you don't need to think that much about it. But still, you need to keep in mind which one to use. In our case, we have a lot of different input values. We have the gender, the age, the location, the company of people. So we use a multi-class classification, and then there's still five options within the tooling. And from these five options, we just tried all of them to see which one has the best significance outcome. In our case, that's a multi-class decision forest, which is not that known. I guess you all know the regular decision tree. A multi-class decision forest is actually working the same way, but it creates a lot of different decision trees. So it creates a big mess, and then it just selects one of the best of them. So this is kind of a forest because it's a lot of trees. And then overall, it creates one best value in order to predict the best outcome and to predict which product someone is going to choose based on the gender, the age, the location, and the company one is working for. As you've seen, the three products we choose, we present. The power bank is way more popular than the other two, but still, we do see some significant changes and differences in the data set. What is quite interesting is that we see a lot of older guys actually choose for consultancy. And what's also very striking is that women do like chocolate, because there's a lot of more women who choose the Mars bar than guys who choose for Mars bar. So we're curious what you're going to choose at our stand. Have a look at stand 25 and see if the prediction works for you as well. And guys, don't hesitate to choose for consultancy. It's just a model, so it doesn't mean you're old. I'm going to hand over to Kevin. He's going to tell you a lot about the Azure automation.
Azure automation. What we have up till now is basically we have all the input information. We know what product they like. But that's it. There's nothing moving. The robot is just standing there. It's not doing anything. It's just standing there waiting until it gets an order. So we chose Azure Automation for that. There's two reasons. First of all, because it's in the Azure platter that we've chosen, we said, okay, we want to do with Azure, so we're not going to pick off any other random products. We could have also used System Center Orchestrator. Anybody know System Center Orchestrator? Okay. But that's not like the next gen tooling. If you're looking at Azure Automation, that's a cloud tool. It's born in the cloud. It's made for the cloud. Of course, its evolution comes from Orchestrator, SMA, Opal, as before that. So it does have some growth. If you look at it, it's pretty mature. It's stable. It knows its way around. But what it misses is that it cannot just kick off a job in your on-premise environment. Well, our environment, that was the Lego Mindstorms robot. The LEGO Mindstorms robot does not have an active connection to internet, meaning, well, if you're not connected to an on-premise environment, I just can't get any signals to it. So to fix that, we added in a little bit of OMS, just a tiny little bit, because OMS, of course, is a huge suite, which you can do a lot with. But we just needed one little thing from it, and that's the hybrid worker. To make a hybrid worker work, you need OMS, because you need the agent of OMS to actually send the commands from Azure Automation to your on-premise environment. First off, I'll just start with Azure Automation. Of course, we're going to also discuss the hybrid worker part, so don't worry, OMS will come in soon. Anybody seen this screen before? Anybody worked with Azure Automation before? Okay, that's not so many. How many IT pros do we have in this session? How many developers? Okay, so that's a big difference. So if I say PowerShell, you might say I'm cursing. Yeah, okay. How many of you do PowerShell? Just okay, that's probably okay, that's okay. Otherwise I was getting a little bit afraid, because of course if you say developers, and normally they want to do it in C# or Java, some even, but whatever. So this runs in PowerShell. If you look at this part, this is basically the settings window of Azure Automation. This is where all the magic happens. If you want to do something, go in here. How do you reach it? Pretty simple. That's why I put it this little clicky thing up there. Just click to all settings. If you don't click all settings, it'll also come up with a nice overview page, but you'll miss a lot of these menus. If you look at what we actually needed for this solution, we needed to look at the automation resources, because we need to do something with automation. And to do that, we need, first of all, we need a runbook. We need to describe what it has to do. And to make sure it does that, we need assets. We need connection credentials. We need to make sure that everything is safe, so we don't want to just put all the credentials in plain text. I mean, I know everybody did it once, but we wanted to do it in a good way, secure way. Also, Microsoft added in DSC. I don't know how many are familiar with DSC. It stands for Desired State Configuration. Well, a couple of guys know it, so that's good. We're not going to discuss it in this session, but yeah, just know it's in there. Microsoft is working on it, and Azure Automation will also be your source where you can control your DSC environment. Is it fully complete yet? If you ask me, it still needs some tweaking. But it's a really good start. The other one, which is really important for us, is the hybrid worker groups. If you look down here, you have the hybrid worker groups, and that's what actually builds the integration between Azure Automation and OMS, and which makes sure that we can commit our code to the on-premises environment and make sure the robot moves. So if we focus a little bit on the first part, on the runbooks, there's four different kinds of runbooks that you can currently create in Azure Automation. First is a graphical runbook. A couple of people already worked with it, so I'm just going to explain it briefly, but so you actually know what it is. The graphical runbooks, it's basically it's a workflow, but then in a graphical sense. It shows you with blocks what it will do, and it's really hard to do anything out of the normal blocks. You have activities in there, you can hook them up and you can say, okay, the output of activity A will go into activity B, and with that it'll do something. It walks through a flow and it'll do that. What's the big difference between Azure Automation when we're talking about flows and, for example, a sequencer? A sequencer just starts at A, ends at Z. It just walks through. If it goes wrong somewhere, it stops or whatever you fill in, but it does not have the power to orchestrate. And that's what makes Azure Automation really powerful. It can orchestrate, meaning if, for example, we have option A, which runs, and then it gives output. Based on that output, Azure Automation can decide if it either goes to B or C. So you can actually make some intelligence into your runbooks. Why is that really important? If you have a simple batch job that runs through a line of jobs, that's fine. Then you can use a sequencer. If you want to automate business processes and things like that, then you really want to make sure that you can make those decisions based on whatever happens in your runbook. Just a little sidestep, but if you start working with this, it's a nice thing to know. So graphical runbooks are basically pretty limited, because I can do the standard things, but besides that, just the ordinary thing. If I want to have a graphical display of my activities, but I do want to add in some custom code, so I want to do some PowerShelling, but yeah, not all of my colleagues are familiar with PowerShell, so they say, if it doesn't have a GUI, I won't touch it. Then you might want to look at the graphical PowerShell workflow, where you, as a somebody who knows PowerShell, can actually do its thing, but still, your non-PowerShell colleagues can actually look into it, and they actually see all the steps you take, so they know, okay, so if it touches this runbook, it does this, this, and this, this. That's something that for every company is different. For us, we needed raw PowerShell. We just needed to get things done. We all three of us, we know PowerShell. Well, Brian, not so much, but he's the BI guy, so he's not going into here anyway. So what we did, we created a PowerShell script which controls the robot. And we saved that as a PowerShell runbook. The one below that is a PowerShell workflow. I don't know how many of you worked with Windows, the workflows from Windows, workflow foundation. How many people like that? Yeah, that. I don't even go there. So if you want to use it, if you want to try it, go for it. It's not my favorite, but it's basically Windows workflows. It has its limitation, but it also has its powers. Yeah, the assets. This one, it looks quite simple. I mean, the buttons say it all. You have schedules, it schedules things. You have modules, which are basically your normal PowerShell modules that you can upload in there. Since quite a while, Microsoft upgraded the amount of storage that you could upload. Normally, it was pretty small. So if you wanted to upload, for example, the Azure Resource Manager module, it would say, this module is too large. Too bad. Well, so now they actually increased it, and now we have a decent size and just all the modules you create on-premise, you can upload. Make sure that if you have dependencies, that they are caught. Because if you have a dependency from one module to another one, and you only upload one into Azure, then it'll break. Certificates, if you're using certificates to, for example, build a connection, you can upload them, and you can leverage them in your workbooks. But make sure that you save them in the right way. If you think, what the hell is he meaning? There's a couple of different types of certificates. For the people that have worked with certificates before, if you start working with them, be careful, look at what you upload, and make sure you're allowed to upload them. I'll leave it with there, but if you have any questions about that, ask your security friends. They know all about it. Connections, if you want to build a connection from, say, application A to B, you can just put that in here, and it saves it all for you. It even can encrypt it for you, so that's all secured in there. Same counts for variables. You can put in variables. You can encrypt variables for your passwords. That really comes in handy, because you can actually say, you can delegate it to your security department and say, okay, you can put in all the variables and the security passwords, encrypt them. I don't even want to know them. Just put them in and tell me what the variable name is, and I'll use them in my runbook. Credentials, well, yeah, you can put in your credentials there. Kind of says it all. This is basically the six main topics that you have when you're working with a runbook. You have your assets and you have your runbooks. So you have these six that you can leverage inside your runbook. Just keep that in mind when you're working with a runbook. But the interesting part is the hybrid worker, because most companies experimenting with runbooks, that's quite easy. You can just make some PowerShell, throw it in Azure, make it run, and it runs in Azure. But what if you need to do something in your on-premise environment? Or if you have certain dependencies that you need to cope with, and you can't cope with them in Azure? Then you need a hybrid worker. A hybrid worker basically consists out of a hybrid worker group. And what a hybrid worker group is easier to explain if I just show you how the interface looks. When you go into the hybrid worker group, so when you click that button that I just showed you, it'll show you the name of your hybrid worker group, but this little number is really important. It shows you how many hybrid workers that you have in your hybrid worker group. Well, we currently only have one, which is my Surface tablet that controls the Lego Mindstorms robot. But for a real-world scenario, of course, you wouldn't want to have only one server in there. Imagine that server failing. Then, well, yeah, goodbye hybrid worker group. So it's always advised to make at least two servers in here. So, okay, that's a lot of theoretical stuff. How does it actually fit in? because we have OMS, we have Azure Automation. How do we get this into the solution and make sure that it all actually runs and you actually get your treat? Well, first of all, we had to install the OMS agent on the Surface tablet to make it a hybrid worker. Once you install the agent, it asks you to perform a couple of PowerShell commands to add it into the hybrid worker group. So Azure Automation actually knows it has a hybrid worker which it can delegate work to. That's basically an installation next finish. You use the PowerShell commands, so there starts your PowerShell journey if you want to do anything with Azure Automation. And then we make it run PowerShell. This PowerShell script is absolutely not saved on the laptop. It's saved in Azure Automation. So Azure Automation pushes this script through OMS onto the hybrid worker. If you're wondering, okay, but what with all the variables that I saved in my Azure Automation, what it actually does in runtime, it decrypts the security credentials that you put in there, and it sends those encrypted over the line to your OMS agent. So it's not like you can just pick it off the line and say, hey, I have plain text. It's all secured from end to end. So when it has that script, it starts executing it. But before it starts executing it, OMS actually looks at, okay, so if I have more than one, which one of these has nothing to do? And I'll just push it to that one. That's also the reason why we said we only need one, because if we have, for example, two or three Surface tablets there, and they all start doing that instead of sequentially parallel, then our robot will start losing its mind, because it gets all these different commands from all these different workspaces. And of course, as Wout already explained, we want to give you real-time updates, so when it starts running, we publish it to the API and we say, okay, the Lego Mindsoft robot is running now, and then you get that nice running screen, which is triggered by SignalR again. Well, the first thing that our PowerShell module does after it put the status on running is building up the Bluetooth connection to the Lego Mindsoft robot, so we actually can send things over there, and it can do things. Lego Mindsoft robot accepts the Bluetooth connection, at least in 90% of the time it does. Sometimes it just breaks down, but and then it starts messaging back that, hey, okay, I have my connection, and we send all these commands up there to make sure that it gets your goodie and brings it back. In the end, we put the status back on success or failed, depends on if it fails or if it goes right. It actually failed sometimes. Yeah. Not that much anymore, no. While developing it, it did have its flaws. Then it reports back to OMS that it's done with its job. So OMS actually gives this agent free. So it makes sure that when there's any other jobs in the queue, that agent is available again to pick up those jobs. And reports back to Azure Automation saying, okay, your job is done. And then in Azure Automation, you'll see either a failed or a success. And what also is really nice is that all the logging that is gathered in that PowerShell script, which is run on your hybrid worker, is also transferred to Azure Automation. So you don't have to log into all these hybrid workers when you're running it on-premise to see what it actually did. All the output, if you at least write it to write output, is stored in Azure Automation. So you can look it up in the jobs table. You can see actually what it did, and if it had any output, it had verbose, if it gave any errors, it's all in there. Now you might think, well, yay, you can make a robot run. Nice. Well, if you look at the concept, it's not about making a robot run. It's about remote executing code that you have in a central stored space, which is Azure Automation in this scenario, and executing it in a secure way, because that's what you want, somewhere on-premise, because that's what a lot of companies are currently coping with. They have a lot of manual labor that they have to do. They have to extend disks. How many of you have disk extensions fully automated? So when a disk runs full, it automates. It automatically extends it or sends an email or how many? Wow, okay. So look into this, seriously. This can save you a lot of work. What you can do is you can make alerts in OMS, which then can trigger a webhook in Azure Automation and say, hey, here, this disk, it's running full. Extend it. And through a secure connection, it can extend your disk on-premise, meaning that you actually don't have to log in the middle of the night because your SQL database is running full and it's going to crash because it's full. You can just sleep on, you wake up in the morning afterwards and you check your mailbox and say, hey, okay, it extended my disk. Nice. I had a nice night of sleep. That's what makes this really powerful. It can automate a lot of work, but because it's not just one job, it's a runbook, which you can delegate a lot of jobs in, you can make a lot of steps. So it can inform you with an email, it can send you a text message, it whatever you want. Pretty much in Azure Automation, the sky is the limit. So how does this all suit together? How are all these data streams and what does this make to a solution architecture? Basically, this is the picture. This is our solution architecture. All these lines, those are data flows. So if you come over to our stand and you see this robot running over the plate that we made, this is what's all going on under the hood. There's a lot of technology. And you might say, well, that's quite a lot of architecture for just a stupid robot moving over a plate. Yeah, I agree. It is. But we wanted to show a concept. And the thing with the concept is it doesn't matter what you want to do with it. I mean, if it's a robot or you want to operate some LEDs by a Raspberry Pi or whatever you want to do, if you combine the right parts of Azure and you make sure that, because every part on its own is very powerful, but combining them, that's what gives you really awesome solutions. And that's when the real power of Azure can be leveraged, because the cloud platform of Azure is really rich. It has a lot of PaaS services, also a lot of IaaS services. And combining those together, you can make, well, almost everything. I haven't seen anything that I couldn't do. Well, it can't fix my brakes on my car, but yeah, normal things you can do with it. So this is basically our solution architecture. And when we go back to the starting of our story, when we started, for those that still remember, we started off with the end-to-end solution. This is an end-to-end solution. We can do anything for a customer. There is dashboarding in there. There's machine learning. And this time, we actually even had some moving parts. So this solution could also fit into a manufacturing company. Why did we do it? To make it touchable. Because seeing is believing. It's easy as that. If you see that it's an end-to-end solution, you don't even have to know what's all under the hood. We can tell you if you want to know, but if you see that it all works by clicking a button on a tablet and then everything starts moving, that's what we wanted to achieve with this, and that's also what, for us, an end-to-end solution means. The customer wants to get the best experience by just having what he wants. Don't overkill it, but just having an end-to-end solution is the way to go. And that's also the way of working for us at Q&H. We really like this new way of working, having end-to-end solutions. And with that, we want to leave you. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate. Visit us at the Expert Lounge or walk by our stand. And don't forget to leave the feedback on the Tech Days app. If you think it was horrible, just say so. If you liked it, we like to hear that as well. So thank you for staying with us.